I'm Mark Bayshore. Thank you for joining us. Governor Rick Snyder takes the stage for his State of the State address tonight. The issue that will dominate the evening is the state's role in the Flint water crisis. The head of the Michigan DEQ has already resigned, and some Flint residents are calling on Snyder to do the same. But while the political fallout might be taking center stage now, the health consequences of lead exposure in Flint will last much longer than the next election cycle. A new partnership between the MSU College of Human Medicine and Hurley Children's Hospital wants to address those long-term impacts on the city's children. Joining us to talk about the Pediatric Public Health Initiative is Hurley pediatrician Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha and Associate Dean at the MSU College of Human Medicine, Dr. Dean Cinco. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Attisha, you've been a key figure in bringing attention to this crisis in Flint. Your analysis of the lead levels in Flint children's blood is one of the reasons the state finally took action. What made you want to do those tests in the first place?
Right. So in late summer, we were hearing about elevated levels of water lead, so lead in the water. And when pediatricians hear about lead anywhere, we get alarmed. There is no safe level of lead in a child. So we wanted to see if that lead in the water was getting into the bodies of children.
You went to the state with the data, but then the state came back and questioned your data. What was that like?
Well, it was kind of unnerving. So, there was a good week and a half of 2 weeks of them disputing our data, saying that we were wrong, that, their data was not consistent with our data. But after a while, with some good conversations, they relooked at their data and actually admitted that my findings were consistent with their findings.
Well, now that the state's acknowledged the mistakes that were made by the DEQ and other departments, we're at a point where a lot of people are asking, what next? Dr. Cinco,
right.
MSU's College of Human Medicine is going to be partnering with Hurley to figure out how to move forward on this. Dr. Cinco, tell us a little bit about the goals of this new Pediatric Public Health Initiative.
Well, actually, this initiative is being led by Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha. So you have the lead person on the line with us today. But she has some wonderful ideas on things that we can do.
Why don't we pass it off to you, Dr.
Right. So this Pediatric Public Health Initiative is just a reinvestment in Flint. MSU and Hurley have been part of the Flint community for over 100 years, and this is our recommitment to the future of Flint. So the goals of this initiative are to continue to assess what happened, so continuing the research to see how bad was this exposure. The second goal is to continue the monitoring of these children. This is a long-term problem, and these kids need long-term neurodevelopmental follow-up. And the last part of this initiative is the intervention. So we can sit back and in 20 years see the consequences of this population-wide exposure, but we can't. We have an opportunity to build this model public health program with experts from MSU and experts from Hurley to intervene so that we do not see these devastating lifelong consequences of lead poisoning.
A question for either of you who wants to take it. Are there events in the past, incidents in the past, that point the way as to how this may unfold, or is this unique enough that we don't really know how this will unfold?
Yeah, I think this is a unique experience. The closest that comes to it is what happened in Washington, D.C. about 10-15 years ago, where they also had an alteration of the water chemistry in the municipal water supply, and it led to increased levels of lead in the water. However, it doesn't appear that Washington, D.C., in follow-up, did anything nearly as comprehensive as what we're proposing here. So I think this is a unique opportunity, and we will be providing some unique data for everyone to analyze.
We want to offer our listeners the opportunity to ask questions of our guests as well. Feel free to tweet us at KAR Current State or email us currentstate@wkar.org. Dr. Hanna-Attisha, explain for us here just briefly, again, some of the major areas of concern when it comes to kids who've been exposed to lead. What kind of impact can that have on a child's development?
Right. So the two areas that we worry about the most are the impact on cognition and behavior. So lead exposure actually drops your IQ. So imagine what we've done to this entire population. We've shifted our IQ curve potentially down. And then lead also impacts your behavior. So it causes attention deficit, hyperactivity, control issues, and it's even been linked to criminality. So it causes these problems that impact education, it impacts employment, and it really affects people for their whole lives. And that's why we're not supposed to have any lead anywhere, and that there's really no safe level in a child.
Do we know how many kids were exposed to lead in Flint's drinking water?
Right. So we are assuming that every child, everybody who drank or cooked with this water, cooking actually concentrates lead in your food. And unfortunately, we had 3 boil advisories in the onset of this water switch because of high levels of bacteria. So anybody
you're saying that actually made the problem worse?
Absolutely, yeah. We had high levels of E. coli in the very beginning, and people were told to boil their water. And boiling, which most people think is you know, makes water safer, actually concentrates lead in anything that you're cooking. Mm. So anybody who drank or cooked with this water was at risk, and our research and state numbers really underestimate that risk because we screen for children routinely for lead at the ages of 1 and 2 years of age. That's because developmentally they have hand-to-mouth behavior, they're crawling, they're exposed to lead paint or lead soil, and they're putting it in their mouth. But lead in water affects a very different and even more developmentally vulnerable population. It affects fetuses, so in utero, and it also affects babies on formula. So imagine that formula-fed baby who's just getting tap water mixed with powdered formula. And their lead levels could have peaked at 3 months or 4 months or 5 months. And because of the short half-life of lead, we don't really pick it up when we're screening them at 1 year or 2 years. So we're really under the assumption that all of our children have been exposed, and thus really all need these secondary prevention interventions, so we do not see the full impact of this exposure.
Dr. Dean Sanko, the research component of this initiative is going to be focused on kids because they're the population that's most vulnerable to the damage. Can you talk to us about some of the specific questions that you want to investigate?
Well, I think we have multiple areas that we're looking at, as Dr. Hannah Atisha discussed, looking long-term at the neurodevelopmental consequences. So, for example, we have on our team developmental psychologists, faculty who are skilled in developmental assessments, and they'll be helping us generate ideas on how we can monitor these children over time to see what changes, if any, from what we would expect are occurring in the population. We also have perinatal experts. We have pediatrician experts, medical geographers, and others who will be exploring any number of questions. So, for example, Dr. Hannah Atisha just mentioned the most vulnerable, perhaps, are the youngest of infants. So one thing that has been proposed is to look at cord bloods and see what the level of lead is or was in the cord bloods of women who gave birth over the past 2 years in Flint and compare that to a control community.
Dr. Atisha, when would you expect the impacts of lead exposure to start showing symptoms?
Right, that's a great question. So the issue of lead poisoning is not a today issue. There is a time lag. So most research shows that about in 3 to 5 years is when you have the presentation of these symptoms. And that is when children start needing those executive function skills. That's when they start going to school and having to, you know, use different higher level skills. And that's usually when it presents themselves. So usually early school age is when we may see these symptoms. But we are hoping that with this initiative and with some of the interventions that we hope to introduce, that we don't see the full consequences and many of those impacts.
Are you suggesting then that if a child doesn't demonstrate any worrisome symptoms in less than 5 years, do the odds go way up that you could probably give that child a clean bill of health beyond
it's
5 years?
Yeah, it's pretty hard to tell. It's very difficult to tell. And even when that kid, say in 7 years, gets diagnosed with ADHD, we will never be able to say this was from lead or was this kid always supposed to have ADHD. So that kind of contributes to this parental guilt and anxiety because they will never know the full consequences of this exposure.
What I know there are measures that can be taken to mitigate damage. Talk to us about those, please.
Sure. So we kind of see these as in three big buckets. So nutrition, education, and health. So nutrition can play a huge role in mitigating the exposure. Specifically, diets high in iron, calcium, and vitamin C can help promote the excretion and limit the absorption of lead. So we're trying to promote that diet. MSU and Hurley already came up with a recipe set. And every week at our downtown Flint Farmers Market, we're actually demonstrating one of these healthy recipes. But we need better nutrition access in Flint. We actually have no grocery stores in Flint. So we're working with our nutrition experts, MSU Extension, to promote.
There is no super. I'm sorry. I have to interrupt there. There are no supermarkets in the city of Flint?
No, there are no supermarkets in the city of Flint. So Flint has pretty much every obstacle to a child's success. There are no grocery stores. We have a 40% poverty rate. We have high rates of unemployment, high rates of violence. Our children had every obstacle ahead of them, and then now they have lead poisoning.
Dr. Sanko, on Saturday, President Obama declared a federal emergency in Flint. This frees up around $5 million in federal aid to help the state distribute filters and water and testing kits. To fix the water infrastructure that led to the problem, Governor Snyder says the state will need $55 million in addition to $41 million to pay for water distribution and filters. Adequate funding is clearly going to be an essential component of dealing with the effects of this. Where will funding for the Pediatric Public Health Initiative come from?
Well, I think we're looking at multiple sources. I've heard the governor, for example, talk about trying to get a supplemental from the legislature to address this issue. So we're hoping that state and perhaps some federal sources, we've been talking with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, hopefully they will come forward and help to support some of these research initiatives because they are complex. They are going to require a lot of human and other resources to conduct, and it is going to be something that we're going to be doing for many years to come.
Dr. Hannah, teacher, one real quick question in just the few seconds we have left. Should a family in Flint using a filter worry today about the water coming out of its taps?
No, if they're using a filter that removes, if it's an NSF lead clearing filter, it is safe.
We want to thank both of our guests. Dr. Mona Hannah Atisha is a pediatrician at Hurley Children's Hospital in Flint. We've been talking about the Pediatric Public Health Initiative, a partnership between Hurley and MSU to study and mitigate the effects of lead exposure in Flint kids. We've also been joined by Associate Dean for Prevention and Public Health at Michigan State University's College of Human Medicine, Dr. Dean Sanko. Thanks to both of you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Good luck.
And this segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday.